Greetings, everyone. I'm excited to welcome Alistair Blenkin, CEO and founder at Procure Pro. Alistair, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Hey, great to have you here. Let's dive right in. Tell us a little bit about your background.
I used to be a lawyer back before I saw the light and decided to get into tech. I'm almost a second time founder. We had an initial tech company back in 2017 that got killed by COVID, and that transformed into Procure Pro. When COVID hit, we pivoted, and I've been doing Procure Pro for the last 3.5 years.
Oh, awesome. So lawyer turned founder. Love that. And tell us, since you mentioned it, it's almost second time founder. So first startup killed by COVID, because we know in the pandemic, some SaaS companies just skyrocketed. Some had a tough time based on what they're targeting. So tell us a little what happened with that first startup.
Yeah, I used to be a commercial real estate lawyer. We were building a highly verticalized contract management platform specifically for the real estate industry. And we sort of, it was almost a good problem to solve, but a little bit of few challenges on the go-to-market side of things. So there's a network effect when you're trying to get landlords, tenants, and their law firms all on the one platform. It's everyone's terrified of the other parties needing to play ball. So there was definitely an opportunity there, but slowness in sales. And inevitably what happened was we launched a product a couple of months before COVID, and then all the commercial landlords, they don't care about business improvement software when their tenants don't want to pay them rent. So
yeah, unfortunate timing. Yeah, appreciate you sharing that experience. It's always good lessons learned in that process. So let's talk about your second startup here. So tell us a little bit about what Procure Pro does.
Yeah, absolutely. So we pivoted from commercial real estate into construction, so adjacent vertical, and solving a really similar problem. So Procure Pro is a procurement software for the construction industry, in particular major builders or general contractors in US terminology. So we help general contractors procure all their subcontractors into a platform. So sort of the old way of working is slap together 10 or 15 different spreadsheets, Word documents, emails, share drives. And what we do is we bring that all into one place. It's a bit of a gap in the construction tech ecosystem. We make things about 50% faster, and then you get the normal enterprise software stuff, visibility throughout the whole life cycle, and some pretty unbelievable reporting as well.
Okay, great. Tell us, what's the maturity of the software category? Are you moving prospects from spreadsheets onto platforms? Are you replacing existing software? Where is this category right now?
Yeah, I mean, construction tech, there's a couple of leaders in the space. Aconex, an Aussie company, got acquired by Oracle. Procore is really well known out of the US. Autodesk has a big construction cloud. So the maturity of construction tech is pretty good. And there's some big platforms doing a lot of things. The niche in the space where we live is relatively untouched for the most part. Tendering or bid platforms, can we solicit quotes in almost a marketplace style platform, does exist and has existed for a long time. But procurement is actually a broader process than just kind of the back and forth of can we get prices in. So there's a whole sort of project management planning aspect to it at the front end of if we need 50 subs on this, $250 million, office tower we're building, how do we plan all of our lead times to make sure that we get them, in time before we need them? How do we project manage that all the way through? How do we draft up a scope, a huge commercial document of what needs to be done before we go out and get our prices? Do these really, really complex price analyses that can be thousands of rows, get it signed off by the business, a whole lot of compliance that goes with it. And then it sort of becomes almost a contract management platform at the other end. So that's sort of a bit of a description where you've almost got, an Asana style project management platform. You've got a bid platform, you've got a contract management platform, and you've got a BI analytics platform all in one. And then I suppose what we do see in construction tech is instead of horizontal bits of software winning that's service multiple industries, it's really highly verticalized. And the reflection of that is it's a pretty unique industry with some non-common sense sort of language and concepts, which means there's this real verticalized software play that manifests.
Okay. And so your customer is the general contractor who comes onto your platform, who then invites all the subcontractors to participate in the platform. Is that right?
Yeah, they invite them to participate, but I mean, there's a huge amount of workflow even on the GC side. So taking our lessons learned from the first startup, we actually built the workflow side of the platform for about 2 years before we even invited the subs in, so that the platform sort of gives that 10x value and stands up in its own right, takes away the fear of, hey, we need the subs to play ball to make this thing work. And then when you do invite the subs in, it's really cream on top.
Okay. And tell us a little about your pricing model. How does pricing work for the platform?
Yeah, so it's interesting in construction tech. I suppose in the general SaaS space, per user is a really common pricing model. In construction tech, it's actually based on, most often based on construction volume. So how much value is being built. Now, the reasons for it are really quite interesting. Construction, because there's so many players in the space, there's GCs, there's subs below them, there's developers, clients upstream, there's consultants. A lot of the tech that you see is actually collaboration between different, you know, organizations. And as a result, when you have a per seat pricing model, you can actually provide a disincentive for people to come onto the platform and collaborate if they're trying to drive price down. So what you then start to see is this percentage of revenue pricing model. So where you take a, you know, if someone's doing 100 million or 200 million annual revenue, you multiply that by a percentage and it gets you to an annual license fee. And I suppose our particular bit of software, it's then an all-inclusive model. So there's no gated features. Every single feature we have, every integration, all our reporting, you know, no hidden costs. It all comes with the platform.
Okay. Yeah. So you're just giving away everything. They sign up and they just get access to all features modules.
I mean, as a company that puts a, you know, we like to think we've got a lot of product velocity and our customers tend to agree. I think that's a real, you know, it's a real selling point for our customers that not just the platform today, but it's, you know, when the tech's kind of doubling in size every couple of years, it's sort of you pay a price and there's a whole lot more coming in the pipeline. And we've got that track record of delivery as well, not just the roadmap that exists on paper, but not in reality.
Right, right. And so what year did you found ProcurePro?
This was right when COVID hit. So March 2020.
And okay, so March. And so how fast was that pivot from your first startup to this? Was it just right away you knew, hey, this is not working, we're shutting it down and starting this? Or was there some time in between as you figured out that next step?
Oh, it was interesting. It wasn't so much of a catalyst moment. Oh, we've got to find something else. We were actually sort of already spotting some of the challenges in our first startup and actually had started looking at construction being an adjacent and related vertical to commercial real estate. I think going back sort of 4 or 5 months into the back end of the year before. And then the thing that was, you know, almost a perfect storm about COVID was it completely shut the commercial real estate side off, which forced us, you know, it really gave us a free swing opportunity to go, hey, we've been talking about doing this construction thing. Let's have a go at it and make it happen. And I mean, that was kind of one part of it. Would you have pivoted as decisively and as hard if you hadn't had that, you know, crazy moment in time? But then also the other thing was it brought one of my longtime construction mates home from overseas who was having a year off after a decade in construction. And he came back due to the pandemic as well. And it was at first, hey, can you give us a day? We're thinking about doing this thing. And then he's, you know, a co-founder of the business now. So,
okay, that's great. So interesting. So really the pandemic kind of sealed it, but you were already thinking of that pivot just based on, like you said, what you saw, the challenges that you were seeing, and then the pandemic hits and it, okay, let's now, yeah, completely make this move.
Challenges and opportunity. Like you look at Jason and you see, hey, there's a similar looking problem in a much bigger space with more customers, higher dollar values. And one of the great things about construction and construction tech is that, you know, the people involved are very, very practical. They're taught dollars and cents and their projects are on a timeline. So if you can provide value, that, you know, there's some real sort of impetus to buy. And I think also construction gets a bit of a bad rap that, you know, it's a laggard, it's behind, that you know, people don't want to change. That, you know, no doubt there are sections of the industry like that, or you know, there might be, you know, single dwelling house builders, you know, running off a notepad and a mobile phone. And that's totally fine because that works for them based on the complexity of their business. But, you know, some of the large scale commercial builders, you know, turning over, you know, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars in construction are really sophisticated in some of the tech that they're using. And there's a huge appetite for this sort of stuff as well. You know, that's going to improve the productivity of their workplaces.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And then where is your company located? Do you have a headquarters?
Yeah, so we're based out of Australia. So most of our teams that myself and another co-founder have just relocated to the UK off the back of this capital raises. Our first big expansion market. So we're in Australia and New Zealand, but then the UK has been firing up for the last couple of months. So getting the local team enabled, and then 2024 is going to be a really big year.
Okay. Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah, I love that. And so what is your current team size?
So at roughly 40, we'll probably be at close to 50 by the end of the quarter and close to 65 by the end of the year.
Okay, love to hear it. So hiring, so 40 now, 50 by the end of the quarter. And anything you want to share around your current revenue size, ARR range?
Well, I suppose we're at a few mil in revenue. We've grown. I suppose Aussie companies have got a bit of a reputation for being pretty capital efficient. So we're having a chat, obviously, before this, before we went on air, Ben. One of the things that we've done well as a company is really lent into our SaaS metrics. And that means when we met a couple of years ago, reading your blog posts, restructuring our P&L, and really kind of doing all of the legwork that made kind of the raise process easy, but then easy to run a good business. So whilst we're at a couple of mil in rev, we've also done it, you know, in an incredibly efficient manner. So LTV to CAC is sort of 50 plus. Payback period is 3 months because we get cash up front. You know, I think burn multiple is typically sort of below 0.5. So there's kind of some really good SaaS metrics, you know, underpinning this. And then I think that really comes back to the quality of the product market fit, and the level of focus we've been able to have as a team.
Oh, great. Love to hear that. Building that foundation now. So now you're ready to scale. Love that. And tell us a little bit of, so you're going after general contractors, I assume, of varying size from, I don't know, local, regional, then they're global contractors. Tell us a little bit about your go-to-market motion. Like, who are you seeking out in these companies to prospect?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've got a focus as a business of sort of mid-market up to enterprise. And we don't go after yet the mega sort of contractors, real large scale multinationals who operate in the infrastructure spaces. A few of them do come and talk to us, but it's obviously a much harder, you know, sale and implementation motion, even if you do get it over the line. So we'll get there at some stage, but the go-to-market has been very much through that mid-market and upwards. And that means speed of sales cycle, speed of value delivery, and sort of predictability of success as well as then we've got a bunch of, you know, national builders on the platform, large scale rollout. So really developing that enterprise muscle as well. In terms of actually how we sell to them, it's a top-down approach. So call the CEO, you know, out of the blue, it's fine. It's an industry where there is a lot of word of mouth. So your reputation does travel. So most people have heard of you. So it's an ability to go top-down, which really drives velocity through the sale and the implementation side of things. Some people in construction tech, they will do a bottoms-up approach when you can sell to a project. But the thing that's kind of a little bit peculiar about our software is there's an approval workflow, which goes through the middle of it, which can go from a cadet at the bottom of the organization to a CEO up the top, and could be, you know, 3, 4, 5, 7, 10 sets of hands in between. So if you've got that sort of behavior, you can't just sell to a project manager. If it's going to then, you know, touch the highest realms of the executive. So a little bit of a forcing function there by nature of what's going on, but also there's sort of positives to that in having that top-down approach, because it means you're not in pilot purgatory or trying to then sell upwards, which has its challenges.
In what kind of sales cycles are you seeing? I assume this is months and up sales cycles to sell into these construction companies.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we've done a fair bit of an analysis on it. It's sort of 2 to 3 months on average. Time from, you know, of the sales cycle while you're in motion versus first engagement naturally differs. Like you might meet people, you know, a couple of years before on the journey, particularly as you're building, you know, who don't buy immediately, but it's a couple of months on average at the enterprise, you know, really range when you're talking sort of 500 staff and above, that sort of stretches out to over 6 months. And practically we've sort of typically known them for a couple of years. And then I suppose what's interesting and sort of an incentive to lean harder on marketing is when you get inbound, it actually drops to a couple of weeks, which shows really that buying intent of the organization. So invest more in marketing. It's got high LTV to CAC as well.
Yep, can't hurt. And let's switch to the fundraising front. So how much capital have you raised to date?
So we did a 2.2-ish million. This is Aussie numbers, so call it 1.7 US. Seed round, that was a couple of years ago. And most recently, we've done a 6.1, so call it 4-ish mil US, which started as a post-seed. We ended up raising a little bit more than we ended, intended to, and call it a small Series A at the moment. So raised that off Tree Ventures, led it, which is one of Australia's leading venture capital funds, who's invested in Canva amongst 7 or 8 other unicorns, as well as the former founders of Aconex, who got acquired by Oracle for $1.6 billion back in 2018.
Okay, that's great. So US dollars, about 1.7 seed round, and then whether we call this maybe another seed or seed extension or Series A, so about $4 million. So around, 5.7, $6 million US raised to date. And so tell us, you know, about the seed and Series A. Did you see any triggers or milestones that led you to those raises?
I think when we go back to seed, it was obviously like we're heavy in R&D. It's a big enterprise product. We sort of wanted to think you could build the MVP, monetize one part of it, but because it's a big workflow platform, you kind of needed to go 15 months in R&D before anyone would get close to an enterprise contract. So that was out of necessity, but also sort of strategic opportunity, getting a lot of, as an angel round with insiders from the industry that were really helpful, you know, to influence, you know, our product and to help with that initial go-to-market. And then really the triggers for, you know, the post-seed Series A was we didn't need to raise and we're a default alive. We could have kept going as we were, but we saw, you know, the opportunity that's in front of us. So we put a premium on speed as every decent startup should. We value velocity and saw the opportunity that's at our hands. So really it was an opportunity to accelerate, but doing it, you know, in a capital efficient manner. It's not get a whole lot of money, pour it all into sales and marketing and you know, go across verticals or anything like that. It's a relatively modest amount of capital compared to, you know, what some companies at the same stage raise. And that probably goes towards like our focus around, you know, quality of execution and really building the business as opposed to purely fueling it with external funding.
Yeah, and I appreciate that insight. And you see that a lot based on the product. It just requires heavy R&D investment and just bootstrapping. It would take forever. So you just need that initial capital to get the product off the ground. And then
I think what's interesting about the UK side of things, though, right, is that you've essentially put all this money into R&D. You've then gone to a market on the other side of the world. So you sort of got that Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere. It's going to mean your revenue is flatter throughout the course of the year. And then you're building a commercial team, which should be pretty profitable pretty quickly. So that really changes the financial complexion of the business as well.
Yeah, definitely. And then in your seed and Series A, any fundraising lessons that you learned along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the big things that I always tell people, it's, you know, 99% in the preparation. So, you know, it sounds like pretty basic advice, and it is. It's you get all of your work done up front, then obviously the fundraising process goes a lot more smoothly. So what we did, which was incredibly well received by the investment community, was we basically prepared long form FAQs. So we had a sort of a massive 10-page document with links, models, videos sort of throughout the whole thing. So pre-prepared. So when anyone, well, basically we sent a deck and our FAQ and said, here's the materials, go and read it. And it served to basically show the investment community just how prepared we were, which the response was positive. You know, people saying these are either the best or sort of the top 5% of materials we've ever seen. And then it also serves as a bit of a qualification exercise of who reads the materials. And you know, that's a pretty good guide for yourself around, you know, who you know, we want to spend time on. So that's the, I suppose, one of the things that we did really well. And we're actually working with our VC at the moment, Airtree, to open source a lot of that stuff, which should be coming to the SaaS community in the next month or two.
Oh, that's great. And that does come about, you know, a lot of preparation, right? Either you're fundraising or you're not. And then, but this is the first I've heard of that, is the long form FAQs, you know, so that actually is the first time this has come up in one of these conversations. So that's really interesting, is just getting all that material out ahead of time, just to maybe answer questions that would come up in a normal conversation. So I assume you can then have better quality discussions when you do meet with those investors.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, if someone's going to diligence you, they're going to ask you like how your market sizing works, and you're going to ask you it in writing. You're going to have a written explanation. You're going to have a bottoms up model, not a finger in the wind top down model. They're going to ask you about your pricing model again. So you're going to have to do all that work, whether you like it or not. Yep. So it's kind of just, do you want to do it, you know, ahead of time when you've got time to think, or do you want to do it when you're trying to work a funnel, you know, of 100 plus people and a whole lot of contacts and run a fundraising process and drive it through to completion. So kind of seems obvious when you paint it like that, but you know, there's obviously a lot of work to make it happen as well.
Yeah. And based on the current stage of your business, Alistair, do you have a favorite number or metric that you're focused on to manage the business?
Look, I think growth rate probably more than anything. If you're trying to grow a $1 billion business and you know, impact the world, I mean, from a sort of a mission perspective, like we're on a mission to save $1 billion hours worth of construction administration, and we're well on our way. We've got some metrics around that, which we really do focus on. But then if you look at the purely sort of financial side of things, if you're going to build a $1 billion company, you know, are you going down the triple, triple, double, double, double? And maybe you don't quite hit those numbers, but we're at least trying to double, if not more, every year. So sort of looking at those growth rates and looking at it out ahead around corners and go, are we making the moves today that enable hitting that growth and not getting stuck? So, you know, at a couple million in rev, you know where you're going to be by the end of the year. Where do you need to be in 2 years? We got to be, you know, planning a couple of years ago about, which we were, about making the UK move, you know, a couple of months ago, which means what's the product need to look like in terms of regionalization so we can hit the ground running? What's the team need to look like in terms of succession hiring so that we can send, you know, founders overseas? What's the balance sheet need to look like so that we're comfortable and actually able to execute that plan? And that means today we've got to plan up what's the org structure look like in, you know, a year or two's time. If we're going multi-product, which you typically need to do in vertical SaaS plays, then we've got to think about what those moves are today to be able to enable that.
Okay. Yeah, appreciate that. And backing up to a little bit to the seed round, when you initiated the seed round, did you know people? Did you know VCs in your space? Did you cold email a bunch of investors? How did you initiate that seed round?
No, we were, I had plenty of sort of VC contacts and investor contacts in the industry, sort of precipitated a little bit by, you know, construction folks in the industry had sort of seen what we're doing. Sort of they just got it straight away compared to, say, the investment community when you're trying to educate about a domain that they don't necessarily understand. We sort of just signed our first couple of enterprise licenses. So it's certainly been enough to get a seed round away in the US. The Australian investment community is probably a little bit more conservative by nature. So we did talk to a few VCs, but we actually strategically wanted to do an angel round because, you know, we took the view that getting 20, 25 people from industry could have a lot more impact than, you know, one or two larger checks at the stage that we were at. And that was certainly right. You know, we've, you know, I sort of mentioned this recently to a few people, but there's a company called PayApps, which is a construction tech company that just got bought by Autodesk recently, or agreement to acquire. And some of the founders and senior staff there have been hugely influential in our journey. So picking up the phone to them randomly, you know, off, you know, through LinkedIn when we first got going, to mentorship, to, you know, a few of them writing a check and sort of helping us through different stages of the journey as a business who'd sort of seen, you know, been in the space and really gets it. People like that are incredibly helpful, you know, as well as a raft of others, you know, in the camp.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Appreciate that insight. And then as we wrap up here, what's coming up next for Procure Pro?
Execution. So, I mean, we've really, it's about building the business side of things, which is a huge focus. Now, naturally, there's a growth strategy, double, and keep going. But really, it's dominate at home, grow really good foundations in the UK, make those moves around, whether it's the next country, the next product, and then beyond that, build the people operations processes that sustain building a really great place to work. So we're really proud that we've won one of Australia's best startup employers in our category. Last year, we had an ENPS of, so we've done well, but that requires concerted effort. So we've got a fantastic team that it's that, you know, everyone's contributed to what, you know, a really strong business that we have to date and, you know, to build something, you know, iconic and noteworthy, both in terms of, you know, construction tech and global technology, you know, global SaaS companies, you know, also means a continued focus and execution. And the big thing is really building scalability into the business side of things, not just the product or the go-to-market.
Yeah, definitely. You got to scale, got to execute. So love that. And I also really appreciate your time today, sharing your experiences. If listeners would like to learn more about Procure Pro, where should we send them online?
Yeah, .co, not .com, or hit me up through LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there as well. So we'd love to hear people if they're listening. And yeah, would also like to sort of reiterate my thanks to you, Ben, as well. Like, part of this, you know, publicity that we're getting at the moment around the fundraise is, you know, due to what's happened and some of the formative steps I mentioned earlier, you know, along that process were genuinely reading your blog posts. Part of the reason why we did quite well through the fundraise and sort of been able to build a good business is off the back of being highly in tune with the financials of it, of which a lot of your work was a cornerstone of that, mate. So I'd like to give you a big shout out on that front.
Well, I appreciate that. Glad you found the content useful and in your journey. So really appreciate that. So if you'd like to learn more about what Procure Pro is doing, check them out at procurepro.co or hit up Alistair on LinkedIn. And again, Alistair, really appreciate your time and sharing your experiences.
Thanks for having me, Ben.